Rainmaker FM. You're listening to The Digital Entrepreneur, the show for folks who want to discover smarter ways to create and sell profitable digital goods and services. This podcast is a production of Digital Commerce Institute, the place to be for digital entrepreneurs. For more information, go to rainmaker.fm/digital commerce. That's rainmaker.fm/digital commerce.
Welcome to The Digital Entrepreneur. I'm your host, Sean Jackson, and we are joined, as always, by the fastidious Katie Katz. Katie, how are you?
I'm doing well, Sean. How are you?
Doing absolutely fantastic, and so excited about today's show. Because of this, a week doesn't go by when I don't get an email from somebody saying, I listened to your show, fill in the blank. Love you and Katie Kitts, because God, no, they would not spell your name correctly. And we've got this great topic that completely aligns with your show, that when reading the topic is completely not what the show is about. And I will tell you, Katie, I get those constantly because we want people to connect with the show, because we put out our text messaging address, because we put out an email address for people to sign up for all that free information that we have at Digital Commerce Academy. But it bothers the heck out of me. However, I will tell you, I think outreach is an important part of taking your content or taking your ideas and finding a new audience. Would you agree?
Absolutely. It's a great way to distribute and, like you said, get in front of an audience that you might not otherwise have had access to.
But the problem is most people do it terrible. Mm-hmm. And it's annoying and it's easily be ignored. However, when it's done right, it actually can increase your online profile in ways you have never imagined. So on today's show, we are going to interview a leading editor of a major publication who receives solicitations all the time of this nature and give you the tips, tactics, and techniques to get through the clutter, to get the attention of the people that make those decisions so that your content or your ideas can be shared on other sites in your space and expose you to a much bigger audience. And that is the topic we will cover when we get back from this short break.
Hey, my name is Brian Gardner, and I am the creator of StudioPress, the first premium marketplace for WordPress themes. When I created StudioPress, I could never imagine that more than 200,000 WordPress site owners would use StudioPress to build some of the most elegant and inspiring WordPress sites on the web. And I am not just talking about the numerous large companies that use it. Tens of thousands of food bloggers, podcasters, affiliate marketers, real estate agents, photographers, and many more have created some of the most compelling mobile responsive websites using StudioPress. But that is not all. To make it easy for you to create a compelling WordPress site, we have introduced StudioPress Sites, a turnkey simple method to create and grow your WordPress site. StudioPress Sites includes many of our most popular WordPress themes, with unique SEO tools and plugins all integrated on our high-performance, secure, and actively managed hosting infrastructure. So when you are ready to take your WordPress site to a new level without the worry or hassle of less robust solutions, then I hope you will visit StudioPress.com. Over 200,000 bloggers and webmasters trust StudioPress for their WordPress site, and we work hard every day to earn it.
Welcome back from the break. So, Katie, will you please introduce our mutual friend and editor extraordinaire for today's show?
Absolutely. Today we have Melissa Fash, who is, by the way, the reigning search personality of the year. And she's worked as the managing editor for Search Engine Journal, like you said, and also community and social team at Moz. But she's currently balancing consulting and managing the rowdy PubCon community. Melissa, she started also as an entrepreneur with a career in freelance copywriting herself. So she's the perfect person to talk to us about this process today.
Melissa, welcome to the show.
Oh, Thanks for having me.
I know you're a little under the weather, so like many people in the United States, so we will forgive the little sniffles here and there. Gosh knows I've had it for a while. And let's get into this, because here's what really blew me away about you, Melissa. You gave this phenomenal presentation at PubCon and really focused on the truth behind the scenes for what it takes to get your content onto someone else's site. Because, you know, this show, and I'll set it up this way, I get emails every day from people that basically start like this. Dear Sean, misspelled, I really enjoyed your episode, title of episode here, and I've got this great infographic about health and fitness that would be perfect for this episode. Please put a link to your show on here, okay? Does that work?
No. No. I mean, I would think at this point, people would realize you need to have content that fits on the website you're reaching out to. But I don't think that that's how it's working. I think people have read all this outreach stuff. Just send your content out, and you'll be, you know, you'll get it published. It just doesn't work that way.
Right.
As you know, I call it content vomiting. There's so much of it. I mean, my rejection rate, I'm currently the blog editor at SEMrush too, is like 99%. Because you're not helping me in any way, shape, or form with the content you're sending me. It doesn't apply. You didn't read our guidelines. It's just not helpful. And with so much content out there today, if you're not helpful or providing something of value, no one's going to read it anyway.
Right. But let's go through some of the mechanics of this, because I think you being behind the scenes as someone who controls major websites for the online marketing space, specifically in SEO, you're getting inundated with these requests. And I think there's really two types of requests out there. I think there's the blind request, and then there's the people that you kind of know request. So let's start with the blind request. I have a legitimate site. I have written something that I feel, you know, really is important to, let's say, the SEO community. Okay. Talk to me about what I should be doing right, even though I don't know who you are.
Okay. Basically, if you're writing about SEO and you're coming to me with an article, the first thing you should do is go through my site and see how many times we've already discussed this topic. If I've already had 10 articles on the exact same topic, I'm going to tell you no. And I do that all day. This is not new to our audience. This doesn't offer any new insights to our audience. So therefore, it's of no value for us currently. Now, if you see, well, she's written about this topic or they've published on this topic numerous times, give me a twist. You know, like they talk about things like schema markup, basically over and over and over and over. But they don't like pick a niche like, you know, like a car dealers or medical. Give me something different that I can use to pull in a different audience and give me more. What I get is the same. And I've already published it, and it's not going to help me. It's not going to help my audience. It's not going to offer anything new. So you might have a fantastic article, and I'm happy for you, but it doesn't help me.
Okay, so let's go through this. All right. I have this great concept that I think would be applicable to your site. I go take the time to really review your site to make sure that it is something that either adds value or is a different angle or something brand new, right? So right. I've got this basic, the context to approach you. And obviously, there is a way for people to send you things to your site. A lot of sites that are accepting guest posts will have that content information there. Talk to me about that blind email, because again, I don't know you, Melissa. I mean, you know, I'm reaching out to you. You know, here's my initial thinking, and tell me if I'm wrong. You know, dear Melissa, I really enjoy your work, especially on XYZ topic. I have an interesting twist about this, which is this. Here is a link to my site, and I would love the opportunity to discuss how my content or how my story could enhance your readers' value from your site. Is that generally how I should approach you, or am I completely off?
No, that's completely how you should approach me. Okay. What I get, though, is I want to write for you. Give me some things to write about. You know, that's not my job. And then they'll say things like, well, tell me, would you prefer something on SEO, social media, or PPC? That right there tells me you're not a good writer for me, because what I'm looking for is experts in a particular thing. I don't need someone that can write in generalities about all different kinds of online marketing. I need people that do the work every single day and can provide that knowledge and that experience that bleeds through the content. That's what I'm looking for.
So that was going to be my next question, is if someone has all of that experience and maybe isn't necessarily a avid blogger who's been published in a lot of different places, does that matter if they can bring that expertise to the table and it might even be their first time?
Yeah. I'll give you a name and an example. Jason Brown is in our industry, and he wrote an article first time about review spam on Google. And I had to do some editing work for him, but it was fine because it was something that was new and different and valid. He has been on the news, national news, regional news about that topic since he published. So I don't need you to be a perfect writer. I do appreciate good grammar and proper spelling, but I will work on an article for an hour or two and fix it if there's value in it, if it's new.
Let's go through that, because I want to talk to you about that outreach again. So, I've tickled your interest. You responded back. You know, So how much work would you like me to do for you? In other words, you know, should I go ahead and include my headline and my lead paragraph and my pitch? Or do I really come back and say, well, here, thank you, you know, for replying back. Here's the headline I'm thinking of and my lead paragraph. Or should I just say, here is my article. And if I'm giving you my article, should I include some images that go with it? Should I take the time to do the hyperlinking? Should I come up with the HTML title and meta description? I mean, how much would you like for me? If I've sent you this, you know, email, I've gotten some response, hey, that's interesting, share with me what you have, what would you expect from me after that?
It's always nice when someone sends you some ideas. You know, here's my idea for a headline. Here's my idea for a snippet. Here's my idea. That saves me time. There's no guarantee I'm going to use it, but it is a time saver, and it's appreciated, because now with SEMrush, they have their own content management system, so I don't have to go through everything. But at Moz and SEJ, I had to clean the HTML. Let me tell you, that is not a fun job. I can tell when you've copied and pasted from Gmail, from PowerPoint. I can see it all. If you send me clean HTML anywhere, if you send any editor clean HTML, they're going to love you for it.
Yeah. On the email topic, I wanted to bring up one more question, because I know that you and I were both actually kind of commenting on an email, that mutual outreach email we had received. And there's this trend, I think, right now for people to try and get funny or cute in their cold outreaches. And I'm sure it happens with publishing too. Like, what is the tolerance for that? Is there a space if it feels genuine? And, or should you just be like Sean was in the beginning, straightforward, here's the benefit to you, and here's what I can give you?
I'd say get straight to the point, and consider that I've probably got 40 or 50 emails every morning from people just like you. So what I need is someone who isn't going to waste my time, who's going to break down for me exactly what they can do for me, and make it clear, like what Sean had said, made it sound like he wanted to do what was best for my readers. And that's my priority, is to please the community and the readers that I have. So, but with what he had said earlier, it's like, oh, they want to do what's right by my readers. I'm instantly interested in that versus I'm funny. Here I am. Tell me what to write for you and I'll do it. Oh, by the way, give me a link. And by the way, you're not going to get a link. So that right there knocks you right out of the running, because it is very apparent in emails and in submitted articles when they've written just for the link. And not at SEJ or at Moz or when I worked at Authority Labs or for SEMrush. We don't give links. I've never given links. I'm not going to give you a link.
Okay, so I send you an email. I've heard nothing back. You know, at what point do I become obnoxious because I'm emailing you all the time? Or at what point am I just recognize the fact that you're busy? This may have gotten lost in the shuffle.
I would give it a few days. And if you don't hear back, ping me again. And here's why. When our entire, like everywhere I've worked, the entire editing team gets the email. And usually there's one person who's supposed to reply to those emails, and they don't often get to all of them. Mm-hmm. If you are emailing me specifically, yes, please email me again. And because I feel bad, but I work a 50-hour work week, and some things get missed. I don't mind it, but what I don't like is when I get an email, I emailed you last week and you didn't bother to reply.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The passive aggressiveness is not cool. You know, sometimes things just get missed. So if you could just say, hey, I just wanted to check in one more time. What do you think? Then it's great. And then I'm always like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I meant to reply to you, but I missed it. So yeah. But if it's every day, that's when it becomes a problem.
All right, but let's go through the other aspect of this, because I not only want to help you with your audience, but you know, at the end of the day, I'd like something back in return. And obviously, in the search marketing world, link is the coinage of the realm, right? You know, links, right. links. To what extent will you allow a link over to something if it is topically relevant for the context of which I'm writing about? Or is it just a default, never link out to anybody else but us?
If it is a resource, we will link to it. If it is a homepage or service page of yours or a client, we will not. Mm-hmm. And we have too much content. And I'll tell you why. And I think we talked about this, Sean, at the session at PubCon. There's a little SEO trick of putting a relevant link in and then 301ing the links. And I mean, there's just so many little things that people do to trick editors, and they might do it 5 or 6 weeks down the road, but it's hard for us to keep up with the mass amount of content and all of the links. So what we like to say that we'll do for you, especially at SEMrush, is we have a massive user base and audience. We send push notifications for related articles. We send out an email for the best 10 articles of the month, the best 12 of the year, to a massive audience. We share in multiple countries and on social media. And if your article is really good, we'll even translate into different languages for our other blogs. I mean, so what I'm trying to do right now is promote the writer as an authority figure. Mm-hmm. And that's really, you know, what I get is a lot of content from people. I work for this company and I'm supposed to generate content. That's great. You can do that, write for your company and get coverage. But at the same time, consider personal branding, because you're not going to be working for that company maybe 5 years from now, and you need to build your personal authority as well. And I think that's where writers forget what the focus should be, which is really helpful content that will last a long time, make them look like an authority. If you look like an authority that knows what you're doing, you're going to help your company, and you're also going to help your own personal branding as your career grows.
Absolutely. So what is the room, Melissa? Because I'm sure with a company like SEMrush, a lot of the blog content is planned, and there's, you know, a big chunk of the content calendar that is planned internally ahead of time. What sort of room do you have for these types of pitches?
It all depends on, we have internal writers as well, which I also edit. So,
yeah,
but we usually are scheduled 3 to 4 weeks out, and it really all depends. If we have you could get in 2 to 3 weeks. What I tell people is, don't come to me and say, this is something that needs to go live next week, because it won't happen. Mm-hmm. That happened so much in December. I have this great article on how people should optimize their sites for Christmas. It's too late. Mm-hmm. That should have been done 3 months ago, you know? So it really all depends on the company you're reaching out to. You never know. Editors will never tell you they're having a slow month. Sometimes they do. Things slow down. And so sometimes you'll get published quick. Sometimes you won't. The one thing that's very difficult is having writers get upset. Why haven't I been published yet? Yeah. And I want to publish you quick. I really do. But It just doesn't always work out that way.
I want to go to a broader topic now because I'd like your opinion on the idea of content syndication overall. I will use as an example Buffer. When Buffer was starting out, they had a phenomenal editor, and she did an amazing job of reaching out to major publications like Business Insider and taking existing content from their blog site, working with publications, using the Rail Canonical to point, you know, back to the original source, and going and taking this content and putting it into more broad stream publications. Do you think that's effective? And if so, how do you do it? Because I would say that there are examples where I have written a piece that is just solid. I know it performs. I know it is very, very good. I think it would be applicable on someone else's site, but it has already been published on my site. How should our audience think about those, you know, meaty pieces of content and getting them out there into the universe?
I honestly haven't got a lot of experience with that. So I'll just tell you from a reader's perspective. At times, you know, when in syndicated content, they'll change up the title so it's a little different. Mm-hmm. And so you might read this really great piece of content, and then you see on Twitter another one similar, and you click and it's the same one.
Right.
That irritates me a little bit. However, you're getting in front of a whole new audience. And so, I mean, I'm all for it. If you can make it work and if you do it right, I think it's a good thing because the goal is to be seen and to gain trust.
All right. So let me pitch you. Okay. Because I'm going to do this. You ready? Here's my pitch. I've written a lot on CopyBlogger about many, many different subjects. I've got data. I've got good information. Okay. I know that your website probably has not experienced content syndication before. So help us create up a craft. Not that I want anyone to do this to poor Melissa, but I want to use you as my editor because I want to reach you and say, look, I've got this piece of content that has performed exceptionally well. I'd like to give you the exclusive syndication for the next 60 days to take this content and to use it on your site. It's obviously not overtly promotional, but it is meaningful and meaty to this topic that you are interested in. So help me pitch this to you, Melissa. How would I take my existing content and pitch it to you? Not that I want anyone to contact poor Melissa to do it.
One thing you'd have to keep in mind is we have a rule that we don't publish anything that isn't 100% unique. Mm. So for me to do that, I'd have to set up meetings with multiple teams and get it approved.
Yeah.
That's it. So it's not, I'd like to say, oh, I'm 100%. I make all the decisions. But when you're with the company as large as SEMrush, you don't.
Okay. Let's go to a smaller blog site then. If you hit running a smaller site, how should I present it to you?
Tell me the benefits. How gotcha. Is it going to benefit me? The other thing is, do you know my audience? Mm. Have you looked into them? Have you looked to see what they say on social media, what they say in the comments? Tie it together for me. Mm-hmm. I noticed that your audience talks about X, Y, Z, and this is how it's going to be relevant to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's all it takes.
Yeah, I could see that because I think it's a very careful proposition that you have to do. First off, I think you have to have a relationship with that website to begin with, right? Because you're right. This is kind of outside of the norm of a lot of traditional content marketing editing shops where they were taking, you know, something that has already been written. And obviously there's a lot of apprehension about it. So I think you actually have to know the people behind the scenes, right? I think that's paramount that they know you from online. Enough that when I say no, oh, that's, you know, Mary, and Mary is always tweeting her stuff, and Mary is always leaving a good comment, and Mary is always just being a good denizen of the internet and helping support what I'm doing. So at least I have some connection to Mary already because she's, you know, one of our fans, if you will, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then from that, I think you are 100% spot on. What is the benefit to the audience? You know, and certainly, and when I say the audience, I also mean the audience of the website owner. Because, for example, if I have a piece that I know is controversial, that'll generate a lot of comments, and it's, let's say, 2 or 3 years old, so it's kind of died out in the controversy, but it could always be reignited. You know, I noticed that not a lot of people are leaving comments on your site. I think this is a piece that I have seen and know that it will elicit responses. Or I notice you don't get a lot of shares. I know this gets a lot of share. Would those be some of the benefits, again, to the website owner? And again, I'm not talking in a formal structure like your shop, but more of the individual, the one or two person organization that is really searching for ways to you know, get people to engage with that site.
Right. No, I think that's a good strategy. Another thing that I would suggest people do is say, I found these three articles that are related to what I'm talking about, and I'd like to link to them within the article. So you're creating internal links.
Yes.
You know? And here are some, you know, some images that you could use for social shares, different ways to tweet this article. Make it no effort for them. Now, when you have a smaller site, I mean, you love to have good and fresh and new content, but for someone to come in and say, here's all the social shares for you, phrase it however you want, but I have images for you. Here's some articles that we could link to. Tell me what you think. We could, you know, edit it if you'd like. Make it easy for them to promote your syndicated article.
Yeah. And then, of course, say, look, we're going to use a rail canonical anyway. So, you know, we're not trying to fool search engines with duplicate content.
Right. So as long as you're making it easier for the editor, and I will say this to people, they seem to miss it. Editing is a lot of work. Mm-hmm. So the easier you make it for the editor, the more they're going to like you, the more they're going to remember you. I mean, just the basic little things make a huge impact.
Katie, I will leave the last question for you.
Yeah, I think one more question that I have on that note of remembering, Melissa, is how much value is there in getting out to some of these marketing conferences and seeking out people who are editors of known blogs and getting to know them in person first? I know that it's been an outreach tactic definitely to try and befriend people on social media, but does it make a difference if you get to know someone first?
Yes. I have a lot of people that I met at PubCon Vegas who are like, you know, I'd like to write for you. What can I do? And it was a little more personable because we could just like chat and talk about, you know, what do you excel in? And this is what I need and this is what I want. And then I would remember them when they left a little comment. Oh, remember when we met in Vegas and you suggested this, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I am a big believer in marketing conferences. I obviously I work for PubCon. I love PubCon, but my career turned around when I started going to conferences because everyone you meet is a resource of some sort. You just have to keep your list. You know, if you want to build your brand name, if you want to build your personal brand, gain resources, you need to go to conferences. And as much, you know, I tell people they should write. Not everyone should write. Not everyone is a writer. But if you have something really valuable to say, and you're not a writer, contact me. I will walk you through it. We'll make it work. You know, because that's what editors are so desperate for, something unique, that they'll take the time to do that with you.
A great way to end our interview with the phenomenal Melissa Fash. Melissa, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you. Thanks.
And we'll be right back after this short break. Hey, everyone. This is Sean Jackson, the host of The Digital Entrepreneur, and I want to ask you a simple question. What is your business framework for selling digital goods online? Now, if the question perplexes you, don't worry, you are not alone. Most people don't realize that the most successful digital entrepreneurs have a framework or a general process for creating and selling their digital goods in the online space. And one of the best free resources is Digital Commerce Academy. Digital Commerce Academy combines online learning with case studies and webinars created by people who make a living selling digital goods online. And the best part is that this material is free when you register. Are you interested in joining? Well, I'll make it easy for you. If you're listening to the show on your phone and are in the continental United States, I want you to send a text message to 313131 with the keyword digits, D-I-G-I-T-S. And when you send that text message, we will send you a link to the registration form right to your phone. Are you outside the United States? Don't worry. Just send us an email to digits@rainmaker.fm. Either way, we'll send you a link to the registration form so that you can sign up for free for Digital Commerce Academy. And as a special bonus, we will also subscribe you to our newsletter when you text or email us so that you can stay informed with the latest insights from the show. And don't worry, we respect your privacy and we will not share your email or phone number, and you can easily unsubscribe at any time. So if you want to start building or improving your framework for selling digital goods online, then please send a text to 313131 with the keyword digits, or send us an email at digits@rainmaker.fm. You won't be disappointed. Welcome back from the break, everyone. And Katie, since we talked to Melissa about, you know, how to successfully reach out to people, and I know you do this as a function of your job, let's give our audience some recommendations on how they can manage the outreach process. What do you use, Katie?
Yeah, so depending on your budget, I've used a lot of different tools that I've really liked. A couple of the more expensive tools are a tool called BuzzStream and also LinkDex. And both of those tools allow you to track what the people that you're reaching out to, what they're talking about, what conversations are important to them. It helps you foster that communication a little more. You can sync up your email and your social accounts so you can actually keep track of what you've said if you have a terrible memory like me. And so it's a really nice place to keep everything in one spot. And then on top of it, like Melissa was saying, it allows you to really see what topics are important and get personal to that platform or that person in that regard. But if you don't have a big budget, you can still really manufacture that process with Google Sheets, set up some columns, track the information that's really important to you. Use Hootsuite to set up different columns based on different categories for social media. There are definitely ways where you can kind of bootstrap it all together.
Yeah, and I think that's the key, though, is finding the ways to put it all together. And if you don't have a system in place, if you don't have a process in place, then it gets very confusing on all of that active outreach. So absolutely, whether you want to use Google Sheets for free or you want to use one of the big tools, the key is, do you have a defined process and do you have a way of keeping track of it? Because truly from that, you will start to build the success that you need in reaching out to the people that matter. So, Katie, that's it for another show. Any parting thoughts?
Just that Melissa is wonderful. I can totally see why she won Search Personality of the Year, and it was an honor to have her on the show.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we will return next week with another episode of The Digital Entrepreneur. Have a great week, everyone.